Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good morning and welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm David Faber along with Jim Cramer. We're live from the New York Stock Exchange. Carl has this Friday morning off. Let's give you a look at futures as we get ready to wrap up another exciting week in our markets. And you can see we are looking for a higher open this morning. But we'll see how we end. All right, let's get to our roadmap. It does start with Boeing yet again. Space trouble. Its new Starliner spacecraft failing to enter its planned target orbit for docking with the International Space Station. Plus, of course, can't forget that record run for stocks. The S&P is on track for what would be its fourth straight weekly gain, and it is closing in on its best year since 2010. And in corporate news, Nike, earnings beat. Sales for its Jordan brand hit $1 billion. We'll talk a bit of Nike, of course, the exit of Mark Parker, its longtime CEO, also growing very near.
Right.
Well, as you saw, futures are pointing to more record highs for stocks. Nike is pulling back in the pre-market despite posting better than expected quarterly earnings and revenue. The results coming, as I just said, as Mark Parker gets ready to pass the CEO reins to John Donahoe. That's going to be next month. And we can see the stock is looking now to be down a bit, but it was a strong quarter.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous. There's like 72 price target increases. It's crazy. It's going to be up on Monday, if not now. It's a really magnificent quarter. People are upset about the 40 basis points tariffs. They're idiots. By the way, the Chuck is selling well.
The who?
The Chuck.
Oh, the Chuck.
Yeah. Oh my God.
What?
I don't think I can take you seriously.
You don't like this. I knew you were going to have to comment on my look today.
But, well, what is that combination?
I don't want to wear a tie, all right?
No, what is the combination?
You wear a tie. I've seen
I sleep in a tie. So what?
You do. I've seen you at all hours.
I don't hang myself. What is that, though? All right, anyway, we got to get back to
it. It was cold this morning.
Yeah.
I put it on, and I didn't want to take it off.
We're not outside. We're inside. Go ahead.
Let's talk about Nike.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. So now John Donahoe is taking the job. This is such a magnificent transition.
Yeah.
Parker is, without a doubt, the great leader, but he's Belichick, okay? He's a Belichick figure, and now it's time for a kinder, gentler CEO.
Donahoe's going to be kinder and gentler?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But most importantly, it's a technology company that sells shoes, and in order to be able to do that, you need a technologist, and that's what Donahoe is. Personalized technology to make your shoes direct to consumer. Really rather remarkable. This conference call had everything you want, including some interesting discussion between Matthew Boss, my fave over at J.P. Morgan,
yes,
and Parker about how they can beat their algorithm every single quarter. And the answer is the product. People love it. Now, I don't even know whether most people know who Jordan is.
Well,
I mean,
from
now it's like crossing Jordan. I mean, do they know that he played basketball?
I think there's still some awareness of him, having a couple of teenagers. Certainly my older one knows who Michael Jordan is.
The Chinese numbers are incredible.
That was exactly where I was going. And yes, they do spend a lot of time on the conference call discussing how important China is.
Well, it is.
And they continue to just make inroads in an incredibly important market for them.
My conclusion, a lot of feet in China.
Yes, there are.
A lot of feet.
A lot.
But I have to tell you, David, in terms of a well-orchestrated conference call, always the best there is. I will miss Mark Parker for his rigor. He is probably the most rigorous conference call giver anyone has ever seen. And he will be missed.
That's quite a statement.
I have to.
Anyone has
They orchestrate it. They give you three bullet points. Then everyone has to go through the three. It's like a very good Shakespearean play, more of a history than a comedy.
Right.
And he just doesn't miss a point. And it's buttressed over and over again. And when you're finished, they get the Super Bowl. The Lombardi Trophy belongs to them every time. This was a magnificent quarter. The fact that the stock is down reflects lunatics who don't have anything else to do.
Well, look at the performance during his tenure as CEO.
Well, I think it's pretty good.
The end here, of course, with the Salazar stuff, with a number of other things.
Well, you have to rain on my parader.
I'm not raining on your parade.
Go read Shoe Dog.
I've read Shoe Dog.
Well, then you know that
the
company has there's some warts and all.
Yes, there are. Yes, there are.
I'm not happy with some of that.
It was a great, great book.
Look, between the lines,
that has nothing to do with what I'm talking
about. Between the lines,
now,
this is the best company, one of the best American manufacturers. Outside the lines, not so hot. But John Donahoe.
Yeah.
It's ServiceNow.
Mm-hmm.
David.
Yes.
Let's get the chart of ServiceNow to see how John Donahoe's done. Remember, you inherited from Frank Slootman, who was magnificently interviewed by Scott Wapner when Scott Wapner was recently in California. Slootman to Donahoe, and then David who? Who's taking over ServiceNow?
Is it, yeah.
Hint, SAP.
I know. I know. He already has, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's
there. Yeah, he's there.
Running. He's running. Yeah. And I have to tell you that this is such a right move by Nike. That's who they need because, boy, the next level, personalization technology, there was nothing Donahoe didn't know. I was surprised that Bill McDermott, who was so big at SAP, went and then took ServiceNow.
Very
quick. He's going to make ServiceNow into Accenture meets Deloitte and then tackles even, yes, SAP. But I loved Parker. I will admit, well, he's going to be, he's got executive chairman. We're not done with him yet. But I think I revere him, David. I'm over here.
I know. I'm just looking at what we got coming up because I want to talk a little bit with you about the markets before we get to this Boeing Starliner story. We can't have a morning where we don't talk about Boeing.
But no, you have to. I mean, here's Tesla. Tesla knocking on the 420 door. 420 being what, David? 420 being what? Now, David, we're on air, and you can stop looking at your... Hey,
this
listen, Sparky.
This was important, and it explained something that I was wondering about, so...
Well, it...
Listen, I don't advise, I have told young journalists out there, don't report by text. However, when you're on live television, it is a way to communicate, and I'm learning a couple of things that will be helpful during the course of our show.
Well, at least we don't have anyone crashing the darn show today.
That said, let's talk about the broader market for a second. We did hit new highs in the S&P yesterday.
Well, there's
I've heard you actually say, well, as typical, different things, but you seem a bit worried about...
We are overbought. I mean, it's just we come in every day and there's Tesla short covers. We come in every day and my absolute favorite stock, NVIDIA, someone comes in and says top idea. There's nobody who is saying, you know what, can we just take a little break and sort things out? I would like to hear that. Even though I am bullish, I would like to hear that. I listened to the Democratic debate yesterday, last night. None of those candidates I find is really interested in your 401k.
No, they're talking. Well, we're going to get to that, actually, what they were talking about.
They're not
about.
In favor of China. I got to tell you, she should take the deal or he's going to be facing a wheel.
You think that any of the Democrats would be as tough, if not tougher than the current administration?
No, they are. It's about climate control. It's religious.
Right.
And it's religious. Also, it's religious persecution. They didn't really talk about jobs at all. Big ag buys. No, I mean, they're talking about a titanic struggle between two great nations.
That sounds like your buddy Ron Vara.
Kind of. Ron's not
interested in
climate change. I keep trying to get Ron to focus on coal.
Ron doesn't care about climate change.
No. Ron's not focused on coal.
The entire administration is not particularly interested. The president spends a lot of his time railing against...
28%.
Light bulbs that efficient light bulbs
actually cut the light bulbs and, shockingly have cut electric use by as much as 40%.
Like them. And the toilets
40%.
That use too little water.
That I'm not as focused on, but there is a coal still 28% of our,
which is going down.
After coal, what's the second greatest greenhouse gas destroyer of our environment?
Methane.
And who produces methane after coal plants? Number two.
Or the oil and gas?
Cows. That's why we want to go beyond meat.
Cows, right.
I'm looking at my executive producer right now, Todd.
It comes out of their mouth.
Is he focused on what I'm saying? Because this beyond meat call is so big. He's focused. He just said moo, which is MU, Micron, breaking out.
He is always
What did you think of Sanjay Mirota? He was pretty
Todd
great.
Bonin. Everything you see here is
Well, I'm doing that shout out because it is the season to be jolly.
It is.
And I want
and
people to
thank
know
our incredible
who our executive
staff.
Producer is, and he's unbelievable, yes. And our staff is amazing.
All right.
I want to thank them.
Now's the time in the
right
show when we have to talk about Boeing, so let's get to it this morning. Its Starliner launched just hours ago, but the spacecraft has been experiencing some issues. Morgan Brennan is at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Best place for her to be to explain what's going on. Morgan.
It's definitely the right place to be, especially as we await a press conference that was originally supposed to start at 9 a.m. Eastern and has since been pushed back to about 9:30. The launch itself this morning, which took place at 6:36 this morning, went off successfully, went off as was to be expected, with Boeing Starliner vehicle sitting atop an Atlas V rocket made by United Launch Alliance, which is that joint venture between Lockheed Martin and Boeing. The liftoff itself was good. When it came time to get into orbit, that is when the anomaly occurred. An off-nominal insertion, that is the term that is being used. Basically, what happened is Starliner did not achieve the correct orbit to be able to achieve rendezvous with the International Space Station, which is where that spacecraft is headed and has been planned to go dock to and stay with for the next week as part of this unmanned test. There are no people, as I just mentioned, unmanned. There are no people on board this vehicle right now. However, this was a key, really essentially final test, or supposed to be a final test, to show that Starliner, how it would operate when it goes to space. This is its first flight to space before astronauts are poised to begin getting on board and using it to go to the International Space Station. So as I mentioned, it's still very much a developing story. What we do know is that the flight controllers do have control of the spacecraft, that it's in a stable orbit. We've been getting updates along the way as well. It's a little windy here. Along the way as well, Boeing Space has said that the flight controllers have just completed an adjustment burn and are assessing next steps. Just a few moments ago, Jim Bridenstine, the administrator of NASA, saying that because Starliner believed it was an orbital insertion burn, that the dead bands were reduced, the spacecraft burned more fuel than anticipated to maintain precise control. But that they're getting good burns and are elevating the orbit of the spacecraft. So still unclear what is going to happen now with Starliner. We are expecting updates at this news conference and whether there is still an opportunity, there's still a window in which they can basically adjust and fix the situation and the spacecraft can actually make its way to the ISS, or whether they're going to have to find a way to land it. It's developing. We don't have a whole lot of details yet, but I will bring you the headlines once I get them. Guys?
Morgan, real quick for me, find a way to land it. Can you give us any more idea of what that means, what that would be?
Yes. So this is a spacecraft. This is a vehicle that was designed for a ground-based or land-based landing, which is actually pretty unusual. And the way it would land is it comes back into the atmosphere. You have three parachutes that deploy and then a cushion that basically comes up, erupts from the bottom of the vehicle to help it land and cushion the landing on the ground. Now, it was expected, it was supposed to link up with the ISS early tomorrow morning, stay for a week. It's bringing cargo as well to the astronauts at the ISS, and then come back down for this type of landing next Saturday, the 28th. At White Sands in New Mexico. So presumably, if that is the decision that they make now with Starliner to bring it back, I would imagine that they're going to be targeting that type of landing and look to recover the spacecraft, which, by the way, these Boeing spacecraft have been designed for multiple reuse, just like the SpaceX Crew Dragon spacecraft that is also part of this NASA program, which is called Commercial Crew, and which is such a big deal, given the fact that it has such big implications for returning human spaceflight capability to this country.
Got it. Morgan, we will be standing by for your updated reporting. Thank you. Morgan Brennan, of course, at the Kennedy Space Center.
I spent a lot of time with Jensen Huang.
Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA. Yesterday you said he's the smartest man in the world, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, forget.
Yeah, no, he is.
Yeah.
And he is developed. He has the machine, the chips, that are developing the sequence that will make it so that our men and women, NASA, will land precisely on Mars.
Oh, yes, you've told me that.
And these guys can't get this trajectory right. I mean, Jensen's got it to the point where he can send the thing so it comes within, going at like 20,000 miles an hour and still land safely on Mars. It's a calculations issue.
Except he hasn't done it.
No, he's working on the simulation
right
now.
Yeah, but he hasn't done it.
No, but it takes a long time.
Yes, I would imagine.
Jensen does simulations in his sleep that people who are brilliant and awake at Stanford cannot do. In his sleep, he does.
Wow. What a romance that is.
Sure.
Up next, Jim's going to have his mad dash, and he's promised me he's not going to talk about Jensen Huang or NVIDIA. It's going to be something entirely different.
Tesla.
Take a look at futures as we get you ready for an opening bell here. It's Friday, last day of trading this week. One of the last of the actual year here as we wrap things up. More Squawk on the Street, though, straight ahead from the NYC. All right, let's get to a mad dash as we get ready for an opening bell here about 13 minutes or so from now. Apple,
It's had quite a year.
I only want one present. I've told everyone.
Yeah.
I've told my kids.
I know.
I've told
what you
my
want.
Wife.
You want the ear things.
Yes. David, I told everyone because I think no one's going to be able to find them. Tony Saganegi, and I want the pros so it's a good noise cancellation. Tony Saganegi, this is a piece of brilliant work at Bernstein, and I love Tony. I'm going to say that right now. I love him. Super guy. Super. Am I making that clear? People say, are you friends? I say, we're good friends. People say, how good friends? I say, we're great friends. We're lifelong friends. David, he says, AirPods could be huge for 2020, but then watch out. On the other side, it could be terrible.
The other side of what?
Means that in 2021, he's predicting a dramatic deceleration in AirPod revenue growth. So, I mean, in other words, he's saying 2020 is going to be gigantic, but look out. 2021 is going to be it. David, this is it, David. This is it.
It's what?
I really don't know. But I would say that the consensus AirPods are way too low and AirPod Pro way too low. We're beginning to start talking about the product as if it is an iPhone. And that's what really matters. It's something else, the ancillary, that actually could move the needle. A lot of people feel that there's nothing ancillary that could ever be near the phone. This piece makes it sound like, look out, this actually may be that big. And so far, my kids have not been able to come up with the Pro.
Right. They are hard to find.
Yes.
When do we expect that Apple's going to somehow increase production to meet
they've never been
demand?
Able to, they've never been able to meet demand for the AirPods, so how are they going to meet demand for the Pro? Is that not amazing? And no one talks about it. Who has that kind of high-quality problem right now? Who has that kind of demand for something? But no, see, first of all, Tim Cook's never invented anything interesting at all.
Well, obviously, it's the company that's inventing things.
No, just that was facetious.
No, I understand what you're saying, but you always like to attribute it literally to one person.
David,
as though he's sitting in his office coming up with this stuff.
Then the other thing I want to show you, see, this is an Hermes tie.
Yes, I'm aware.
And I'm going to let you wear it for the second half of the show because I just can't take you seriously whatsoever. But anyway, this is the Tony Saganegi actually has the guts to talk about
today.
How bad
so
this is
nice.
Going to be in 2021.
Yeah.
That's not as rigorous as I'd like.
You pointed out your differences of opinion with Mr. Saganegi.
It's ill-advised suboptimal research.
Right.
Okay?
Watch out on the other side.
Right. Yeah. Hell's
it's
Half Acre.
It's going to be an incredible year.
Jordan Rivers deep and wide, but when they get to the other side, it's going to be awful.
The comparisons are going to be tough a year after the incredible year.
Elizabeth Warren loves this piece because it's about taking rich people's money away from them.
Okay. Well, stick around. We got a lot more things that we're going to hear from Jim. Myself, all of our reporters. We're going to talk a lot about that trial that's going to wrap up actually today uptown involving the states.
And Elon
Sprint
Musk.
And T-Mobile.
No, Tesla.
Tesla.
I have nothing to say about Tesla other than 420. You're going to tell me what 420 means later on.
I know what it means. We're back after this. All right. A little less than 7 minutes before we get started with trading here. You can see we are set up for what would be a higher open for the markets as we hit some records yesterday. We'll keep an eye on the S&P 500. The opening bell just a few minutes away. If you're watching CNBC's Squawk on the Street, we are live from the financial capital of the world. It's not London, it's New York.
All right,
why not? 3.5 minutes to go before we get started here with trading. All right, always gives me a chance. When our dear colleague Carl is taking the day off to ask you at this point, what is the key to this market? Meaning, what is sort of one of the keys you see to sort of sentiment and trading that's going to go on
it's
today?
It's going to be AMD, David.
AMD.
You know, Wedbush says something that a lot of people are starting to really realize is that these Intel manufacturing problems aren't getting any better. They continue to bedevil PC makers, but you know who has the chips and is winning everyone. Now, Andy Grove were alive today, he would not believe this. The Jerry Sanders AMD was really kept alive, I felt, by Andy Grove in order to make it so they didn't have a monopolistic a case by the Justice Department against them. But AMD has got it. $39 goes to $51.50 at Wedbush. That's right. Lisa Su does not crow. Never once has she ever even mentioned the name Intel to me in all my interviews because it's not her style. But, David, they are the winner and new champion. Semiconductors.
AMD now sporting a $47, $48 billion market value.
Isn't that incredible on the balance sheet? You know, the first thing she did was clean up the balance sheet, giving how thorough she is. Rick Hill, the genius who was behind Novellus that was sold to Lam, and also by the incredible Symantec, told me she worked for him, the most rigorous thinker that he has come across. IBM, you know. She's MIT. She's not West Coast.
No.
I continue to believe that the East Coast people are every bit as smart other than Jensen Huang.
Oh, I like her because she grew up in Queens.
She's from Queens. Dan, her husband's fantastic.
You've talked about this chip shortage yesterday as well, not just
it's
Intel,
just
but you talked about it in relation to Micron, and then you also mentioned, obviously, HP Inc.
Yes.
Because of their reliance.
Because they're going to miss the first quarter.
Chips.
They will miss the first quarter because they're too reliant. But I just think that this move of AMD is the move of the year. If we were doing the show the last day of the year, I would say the AMD move is probably the most seminal move I've seen in ages. Taking an also-ran company and making a powerhouse in maybe 18 months.
It's been quite a thing to watch. And, you know, the stock did come off dramatically, as you know, from sort of, late 18 during the, and then the fall last year, and then this year, of course, it's just been.
There's also reacceleration of the data center.
Yep.
That is fantastic for AMD. When you get offline with people out west, whose chips do they think are the best other than NVIDIA's? It's AMD. They have a new iteration. Lisa Su uses these cities in Italy as Rome, Naples. And I said, listen, when you start when you start getting Fournichette, where my house is, now we're going.
Check that house out one of these days. All right, the applause building, of course. They do that every day, but in particular on a Friday, when you know you're going to be on vacation soon.
We don't talk about that.
You want to actually...
David, Winnebago. The millennials are back buying Winnebago.
All right. We'll get to that in a moment. As you see the opening bell, of course. That's a real-time exchange. The S&P 500 as well. That's at our headquarters. Here's the big board. Howard Hughes Corporation, owner and developer, of course, of commercial and residential real estate, including the South Street Seaport, not far from
an
here.
Ackman chairman
filed that 13D saying he wanted to talk to management. I thought that was the funniest.
Yeah, it was,
of course,
it's funny,
13D. The chairman. They didn't sell the company, though. Remember, I did that story. Then they went out and tried, and they couldn't find buyers.
David, why do you think that suddenly...
Let me get to the NASDAQ real quick. Just tell people.
Right.
Elevate Network, global community for professional women doing the honors there.
Thank you. David, what do you think about all the stories about Goldman and the Justice Department and one and MDB? Because the Justice Department doesn't talk and Goldman doesn't talk. So why are we so sure about it's $2 billion? Why are we so sure it's going to happen soon? Someone's talking. And when Goldman puts this behind them, we're going to be talking about the revolution at Goldman, the retailization of the company, and the credit cardization of the company. And people are going to like that, even though it's certainly not the Goldman I worked at.
I don't know where those leaks are coming from. I'm certain they're not coming from Goldman.
Yeah.
As for the DOJ, I don't know.
I don't know how much they talk.
The journal yesterday reporting it could be about $2 billion. That's below what had
originally anticipated. The word was that they took a $5 billion, they have a $5 billion
right.
reserve.
And don't forget, they're also dealing with the Malaysians.
Yeah, they got
who
that.
Who are also working that.
Well, the Malaysians are after everybody.
But they, right. I mean, meanwhile, they were right at the center of the actual...
Well, the VIG on those bonds that they sold, David, red flag.
It was a red flag. There have been some questions there about risk controls that Goldman has claimed. It was not really out of line with what others would have done. I hear different things. But to your point about Goldman, which is down a bit today, up 37% for the year, sporting a market cap slightly below that of its one-time main competitor, Morgan Stanley, but they've sort of diverged in terms of their business models to some extent.
But it finally has a 10 multiple.
It does.
And the people I know at Goldman were horrified when it was in the bottom decile of multiples. Almost, David, where the multiple of Viacom is. Seven multiple.
We'll talk about Viacom and its latest deal. The moot stock has been moving up this week. But on Goldman, Jim, Mr. Solomon is pushing change pretty quickly within that organization.
Oh, my. And I've been working a lot on the Apple Card. The cultures are just not synonymous. A credit card company, which is Apple, which, of course, says in its ads, not with the bank. Well, of course, the bank is Goldman. But I just think that if it really gets rolling, Goldman's going to have to spin it off.
Mm-hmm.
Not unlike other things. Just under the same roof. It's just... hard to imagine.
But isn't it central to a certain extent to the overall efforts they're making?
I'm not sure.
Outside of the large institutional business?
I think that they've done a good job building it out. I think that the other banks are quite jealous. But they could never do it because the rate that Goldman, that Apple wanted would have made it so every other major credit card user would have said, you got to give us that rate. You know, an American airline. You know, I don't know whether what's in your wallet, but the airline credit cards, for instance, they would all come in and say, listen, we want Apple's rate. I don't know, but they only have one customer, and that gets, so therefore they are in a no conflict situation. But David, it's so secretive, you can't find out a thing. And yet I've been working endlessly to see how it's doing. And the work that I've been doing says it is a phenomenal success.
I know you've been saying that.
Well, no, but David, no one else has done any work on it to speak of.
They haven't?
No.
Well, it's hard to do the work on it. It's very early.
I do what's called reporting.
The KBW Bank, I mean, it's had quite a move.
Well, I mean, because, David, the yield curve. The yield curve.
And those banks, I mean, Goldman has lagged some of the larger names. Well, not much, but I mean, JP Morgan up 41%, Bank of America up 42%. Citi is up 50% this year.
Well, Citi was selling at below tangible book.
Look at the move there in the last.
Mike Corbat was buying back 8% of the bag as a CEO. 8% of the stock every single year. And it was just way too cheap versus the group. Remember, though, it's really still a fintech year. It's a MasterCard. Shout out to Lisa Ellis. Done unbelievable work at your friend Moffitt and Nathanson's place.
True. But if I bought that index, I'm outperforming the S&P. I'm pretty happy.
David, you were dealing with the Powell bear market. Powell set all these banks back. You know, we are in the thick right now of when Powell was really destroying the economy.
A year ago?
Yeah.
You mean?
Yeah, but he, rookie, comeback second year, he's comeback kid, sophomore years, no slump there.
No.
No.
And then we head into next year with the expectation that rates are not going to do much of anything.
I think that's, and look, I think that the economy reaccelerated after the Fed cut. You get that from retail, you get that from, except for, you know, obviously the retailers.
And right now there seems to be belief that there is an acceleration. And you have pointed out, and I have as well, and we've been talking to CEOs who do business around the world, that Europe is even starting to see
Remember, Europe is, as Fred
Smith
said,
of life.
It had been a collateral damage of the trade war.
Yes.
As the trade war diminishes, that is absolutely terrific.
Bullets, as you've quoted, Fred Smith said in their conference call.
That was still the worst conference call of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
That was the worst one of the year.
Yeah, that was horrible.
The FedEx call.
Alan Graf saying at one point, CFO, it's the bottom. It's the bottom. You don't do that. Now, Sanjay Marocha called the bottom, and he said, it's the bottom. So the inflection.
So you just don't like the way that they inflected when they said it was the bottom.
It was bad inflection.
At FedEx.
They inflected.
But you liked it at Micron, and therefore Micron was believed as a bottom, but FedEx is not because...
Well, it's like the bottom, like it. It's like it's a team that's 7-7 right now, and it's like, it's the bottom, and then they lose out. I didn't care for it.
I want to come back to the trial that we've been following. I don't know how many others have, but I certainly still continue to believe it's pretty important. Sprint and T-Mobile.
Yes, since it's going to be the price,
union,
how much you're going to pay for this.
SoftBank, obviously, the owner of Sprint, very much watching this closely. Dish, the beneficiary of the divestitures that would take place in its attempt to create a fourth, what would be, because you'd have four and three getting together, a fourth wireless nationwide player in 5G. All this at play. The closing arguments are not going to be till January, but today they're starting. They just started at 9 a.m. Up the street here from here. And the states are going to be calling a couple of witnesses, Dr. Fiona Scott-Morton, and Dr. Carl Shapiro.
Who these people are, please, are economists.
They are. They're both economists. They're both going to talk.
I mean, Carl Shapiro was involved with the previous...
With the Time Warner.
Time Warner.
Yes, he
was.
He's
hilarious.
Yeah, he was.
Good. Hilarious economist.
They have... The states have said why they believe it would be any competitive, but they haven't had somebody also attack the remedy. Remember, that's the DOJ part of this. Where, and you heard Sorkin talking about this at the very end. He squeezed it in there. The DOJ is going to file around 10 o'clock. They're filing, which is expected, saying why all the things they did and what they did are pro-competition in terms of allowing this deal to go through. I will say this. When this trial began, with the New York State AG being one of the leads here, a New York democratically appointed judge and four going to three and the HHI scores and how easy it would be, given precedent, to just say, this is anti-competitive, right. I'm going to issue an injunction. Going in, many people believe, Jim, 65-70% chance that the states would win.
Really?
But given... Yes.
I've read meetings.
Yeah.
I don't think that...
Well,
I
now,
think
since
the other
then,
way.
I will tell you that the people who watch these things closely, and again, I mean, let's... Putting a percentage on it, very difficult. Believe that it's come closer to 50-50.
Yeah, I think that's
true. That the arguments put up, that Ergun did a good job. Charlie Ergun, of course, Dish's founder, chairman, did a very good job sort of in terms of giving credibility to the idea that there would be, that he would be a real potential competitor. And so... We'll see. We're not going to get a decision.
Why does
for a
it
while,
not get
they are wrapping
the coverage
up,
that it deserves? Since it's determined, it's probably the most inflationary. It could really change the CPI. Why don't people talk about it?
I don't know. You do.
It's incredibly important. The tower stocks really ran yesterday, by the way.
Did they?
Tower stocks have been running. I think it has totally to do with your trial.
Really?
Yeah.
Dish also had a nice move, a bit of a nice move.
Facebook
as well.
Just reversed. So what? What newspaper's attacking Facebook? Someone want to get that? Pull the negative piece. Just
A article today in the Journal, of course, citing that big rally in biotech. We've talked about the overall rally in healthcare related to Elizabeth Warren's poll numbers to some extent, but also when it comes to biotech, of course, a number of successes, a number of large, huge premium deals for smaller cap companies by the big guys. And I'm watching some of the big guys today. Merck is up 1.6%.
David, the move this time was because of the
Lilly's
incredible,
up 1.4%.
Incredible. Dave Ricks came on Mad Money.
Yep.
Eli Lilly.
Yep.
David, the idea that Eli Lilly has this unbelievable pipe and it was only selling at 20 times earnings in retrospect was Warren. Now, Elizabeth Senator Warren yesterday seems like one of many.
Speaking of Elizabeth Warren.
What do you got?
Last night in Los Angeles, as you know, seven Democratic candidates squared off in the presidential debate. The Iowa caucuses, by the way, are now just weeks away. The economy among, of course, the major issues discussed. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg said the record-setting stock market is not indicative of how many Americans are faring in this economy.
Where I live, folks aren't measuring the economy by how the Dow Jones is looking. Measuring the economy by how they're doing. When you're doing the bills at the end of the month at your kitchen table, and you find that even if your wages have gone up, it's not nearly going as fast as the cost of health and housing. This economy is not working for most of us.
It was an interesting line there. Of course, I agree with him. The Dow is not the way to measure it. You want to use the S&P, as you well know.
And look, there are trillions of dollars in wealth being created. I think the mayor, Mr. Mayor, is... did a lot of credible stuff last night, but I think that there is a component that does matter because of 401ks. There's some changes in 401ks. They added annuities. I don't know why they did that. Healthcare has not been resolved, and your healthcare premiums did go up because ACA was not allowed to be adjusted. Had they been, had Congress subsidized certain districts
right.
where there was too many pre-existing, so nobody wanted to write. It would have lowered your health care bill. So I would not say...
Health care is still a black hole.
It is.
It really is.
And
a lot of it
is just the last 10 days of life.
You look at what hospital charges are for
10
something.
10 times. They mark up cancer drugs 10 times.
And you just have absolutely no idea still what you're paying for.
But why can't
Miscellaneous.
Congress,
miscellaneous.
Right. But why can't Congress investigate? I mean, for instance, Eli Lilly has a drug, an insulin drug, that's half price of their other insulin drug that they provided.
Right.
But the formularies, the big drugstores, are not using it.
Yep.
So why aren't the drugstores being called to account? But no, because the lunacy of the healthcare system is that they just blame the healthcare system. But I've got the villains. I have a lot of the villains are very, very easy to find. And they are, if you just had some serious hearings, you would hear why things are marked up, how they're marked up, and who's marking them up. And a lot of it would be the hospitals.
There was also an interchange between Buttigieg and Warren about campaign donations. Buttigieg holding fundraisers in
Caveman.
Very wealthy people are
attending.
Warren taking issue with that. Take a listen.
We made the decision many years ago that rich people in smoke-filled rooms would not pick the next president of the United States. Billionaires in wine caves should not pick the next president of the United States.
Mr. Mayor, your response. You know, according to Forbes magazine, I am literally the only person on this stage who's not a millionaire or a billionaire. So if this is important, this is the problem with issuing purity tests you cannot yourself pass.
That was interesting.
Yeah, the wine cave.
Smoke-filled rooms, I think, is it takes you back a little bit. People don't, thankfully, smoke any longer for the most part. Certainly not very wealthy people who seem to want to live forever and are very focused on the latest in, of ability to actually extend their life as far as possible. So I think she should get rid of these smoke-filled rooms.
Yeah, that was Craig and Catherine
Hall. Wine caves I kind of get a little more, because that is certainly something when you amass great wealth, you're always looking for new things to spend it on. And we all know a lot of people who like their wine.
Yeah.
It's just one more thing I can buy.
There are...
How you're going to value it under a wealth tax, Elizabeth Warren's going to be interesting.
But. Yeah, there are a number of wine caves.
Yes.
This was the Hall. That was very good. But, David, that was one of the funnier moments of the of it. But no one was laughing. There was no laughing.
The debates will continue. Only seven people on the stage. Of course, it did not include Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, who is running, but is funding his own campaign.
Yes, but I do think that if you look at what was matter for, what was consequential for the economy, I did think the Chinese discussion was rather extraordinary. I mean, it really was just to hear the other day, Eamon Javers broke a story that no one paid any attention to, and it's driving me crazy, that Kissinger's been doing shuttle diplomacy between Beijing and the president. And one of the things that's come out of that was President Xi is hoping that President Trump wins because he does not care for the field of Democrats, because they're worried about other issues, including, David, human rights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you know that was a question came up about boycotting the 2022 Olympics? Now, Trump would not boycott those Olympics, but this is the Shanghai Olympics. If it happens, David, if the Democrats pull this off, David, it's going to be, you want to see a trade war?
Right. Well, 1980 is when we boycotted the Olympics in Russia, of course, due to their invasion of Afghanistan. But let's not talk any more geopolitics. Let's get back to the markets and check in with Seema Modi. She's on the floor. Seema.
Good morning, David. Interesting discussion. Another day, another record high for the S&P and NASDAQ. The NASDAQ now just about 100 points away from breaking 9,000. Also in focus this morning is oil trading at a three-month high. Now the S&P 500 with today's gains on track for its fourth straight week of gains. Mixed headlines on China overnight. First, China's top ag consultancy said China can meet a pledge to purchase $40 billion per year of U.S. ag products. Separately, another report says that Chinese President Xi Jinping is planning to skip the World Economic Forum in Davos, dampening hopes of a summit taking place there with President Trump. But a lot of positive calls this morning on Nike. Yes, the stock is trading down following strong earnings last night. Higher average selling prices helping offset some of the negative impact of tariffs. Greater China sales up 23% versus the 27% sales growth it saw last quarter. Shares are down about 1% right now, but Nike's management, worth noting, very positive on the strength of the global consumer on the earnings call last night, referencing the passion for sports and active lifestyles, growth in emerging markets, and that its digital initiatives are paying off. You compare those comments with what FedEx CEO Fred Smith said earlier this week, that Germany is struggling and that he sees China's slowdown continuing through the first half of the year. It's yet another example of this split between a strong consumer story playing out and the struggling manufacturing and industrial part of the economy. And in fact, on that note, take a look at shares of U.S. Steel, down now over 8% on a dividend cut, a warning on guidance, and on pace for a second straight down year. It's also closing a mill in Detroit. The CEO of U.S. Steel blaming current market conditions. Remember, steel tariffs went into effect in early 2018. Guys, that stock down 32% this year. David, back to you.
Seema, thank you. Seema Modi. Let's head to the bond pits now. Check in with Rick Santelli at the CME Group in Chicago. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, David. You know, pretty much all week, treasuries, especially the long dated, the long end, you know, 10s, 30s, have been knocking on the door of resistance above the markets in yield, not quite penetrating. Not so much on the short end. Look at a 2-day of 2-year, unchanged on the day. Open it up to a 1-week chart, We're up 2 basis points. Really has been a very consolidated, tight move in the short end while the Fed's in pause mode. If you look at a 2-day of 10s right now, they're also up 1 basis point. So not a lot of big movement on any of the curve today, but 10s are up 10 basis points on the week as you open up the chart. As a matter of fact, so are 30-year bonds. So we've seen a steepening of 10s to 2s of 8 basis points thus far this week. And if you open the 1 week of 10s up to November, you can see the resistance I'm talking about. I have a lot of emails where traders are looking at the quote-unquote double top around 195. So whether it's going to actually hold or not, if you get through, look for some quick follow-through, then assess if it can stay above resistance. And finally, if it does open the chart up to July, that's where we'd be comping to. Same month, actually, that Boons are comping to as they hover around minus 23, some of their best levels since the 4th of July as well. David and Jim, back to you.
Okay, thank you, Rick. For the bond report, please make sure to check out our podcast. You can listen to the opening bell hour of Squawk on the Street wherever you listen to podcasts.
You have a tie on in that picture.
I will have a tie on most of the time. It's Friday. It's very nice. I know you sleep with a tie, but you might want to try.
Why not? You want to give it a shot.
Try relaxing.
I do it with my boxer shorts, which it really works.
We're back after this. All right, we've got more news on the failure of that Boeing Starliner. Let's get to Morgan Brennan at the Kennedy Space Center. Morgan.
Oh, Florida. That's right. So we've got a press conference underway right now as I speak to you with NASA, Boeing, and United Launch Alliance officials. Here's the key headline from this press conference so far. Boeing's Starliner spacecraft will not be able to rendezvous with the International Space Station. However, it will remain in orbit. They are going to keep it in safe orbit, collecting data, and they are going to return Starliner to Earth via the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico in about 48 hours. That's the earliest landing they can do. It's going to be 7:30 a.m. on Sunday, although that, too, could change. In this conference, though, stressing that the spacecraft looks healthy, that it was the absolute right decision to come back, to come home with it. And Jim Bridenstine, the NASA administrator, saying repeatedly that actually, today, a lot of things went right, and this is exactly why they test. So it was an automation issue here. Basically, as soon as Starliner separated from the upper stage of that Atlas V rocket, it was supposed to begin burning. That didn't happen. The engines were supposed to begin burning. And also noting that if people, which is what the spacecraft is ultimately designed to carry, that if people were on board, astronauts are trained, they could have intervened, they would have been safe, and that they probably could have taken the spacecraft to the correct orbit and ultimately been able to dock with the International Space Station. So that is your headline right now. Boeing Starliner is destined to return to Earth in the next 48 hours. However, wrong to call it a failure, not a failure, definitely an anomaly. And apparently, they're continuing to collect a lot of information and make as much success from this mission as possible.
Morgan, thank you. We'll be checking back in with you, of course, in the next hour. Morgan Brennan, not a failure, but not a success.
No. There's no pass-fail, though. David, no. Arnold Donald, one of the good men, one of the
Arnold
good guys.
Arnold Donald, the CEO of Carnival.
Blew the numbers away. This industry's on fire again. And I salute him. He's on closing bell. Carnival, blow away.
This is your stop trading, of course, that we're talking about right now.
Yes. And I'll get you a tie. It's not a problem. I have a closet full.
I have a bunch of ties. I'm just choosing not to wear one. I knew that this would upset you, and I still chose to do it.
Even Wilfred Frost shows me the respect by not doing that.
Well, he wears a tuxedo underneath at all times.
Bond. James Bond. Shaken.
Yes, not stirred.
Smirnoff.
All right, back to Carnival for a second. Is that a reflection of the consumer economy and the health of the consumer as well?
Yes, and I also have Paychex one tonight, which is another reflection of a very good situation. David, things are good. I hate to say that, but things are good. Just kidding. I like to say it. I'm going to miss you this weekend, going to the Eagles game with my daughter.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss you next week.
Flying from Spain. I might be here. You don't know. I could be a simulation.
Wherever you are.
Congratulations,
I know one thing. You're going to be wearing a tie.
Always.
On vacation. Always. Doesn't matter. Put them anywhere. You've got a tie on.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.